Kulya, De Grey River, Yalaberry, Shaw River, Gallibury, Nickel Bay, Junguna Kalia, Coolawanya, Yalabiddy, Northwest Cape, Yalobiddy, Lions River, Kalaya, Jigalong, Gibson Desert, and Laverton, Jacoburi, Warburton Range, Yalabiri, Pidong Tribe, Upper Murchison River, Yalabiri, Wallowee Tribe, Mount Magnet, Kaliat, Shark Bay, Kulya, Murchison River, Mount.
An oral history of the Emu War, made as part of the Bathurst Arts and Theatrical Society 2020 flu season.
Wadji, Perth, Widgie, Wage, Southwest, Waite, Nurik, Albany, Tula, Minaming Tribe, Fraser Range.
Okay. Recording. An Oral History of the Emu War, Part 1. Could you introduce yourself?
Yes, of course. My name is George Pierce. I was the Minister for Defence. I oversaw the war. Yes.
Tell us a bit, if you could, George, about how you came to play the part you did and what happened.
I remember it well. 1932. The glorious Lions Ministry. My 31st year in the Parliament, proudly serving the Australian people. And who was I to deny the battlers in their hour of need? but I'm not explaining this well at all. What you really need to know is, I always knew. I could always tell the emus are up to something. You can always tell if you really look deep in their eyes.
Okay.
Look, as I said, you need to know the history behind it all. I know the story of the Emu War sounds a little strange out of context. but the history starts long before 1932.
Dominic Cervantes and Hubert Whittle, 1948, Birds of Western Australia. Despite the fact that it has declined in numbers in the closely settled areas, the emu in recent years has attracted considerable attention by developing into a major pest in the northern and northeastern wheat belt. When the Vermin Act was originally passed by the State Parliament in 1918, the emu was not important enough to figure in its provisions, and the bird first found its way into official records as a serious pest in 1919, when the Upper Chapman Road Board at Nansen sought the removal of protection for emus on the ground that they were a menace in the cropping season, owing to large mobs trampling through the paddocks and feeding on the wheat.
I first entered Parliament in 1901. First try! I was in the Labour Party then, my first political home, but that was just the beginning of a long career.
The agitation spread throughout the Northampton district and South Emingenue. In 1923, protection for emus under the Game Act was removed north of the 30th parallel south, and district vermin boards were empowered to levy a bonus on emu heads.
And 7 years later, it was under Andrew Fisher that I first ascended to cabinet, and it was time for me to move on to bigger and better things. You know, representing unions is one thing, but how could I turn down a title like Minister for Defence? Pew, 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 pew! Nice!
The records are defective as to how many birds were destroyed in this period. Local boards paid about £180 as bonuses in 1926 to 27, and £136 in 1927 to 28. It was further reported that in the latter half of 1928, between 3,000 and 4,000 emus were destroyed in the Agena district alone. And one farmer stated that earlier in the year he had seen a heap of dead emus on one holding 16 feet high by 4 feet square.
Of course, the Great War in 1914, almost as great, you understand. It changed everything. Poor Andrew just couldn't handle the stress. But not long before his worthy successor arrived, Billy Hughes. Billy! Billy!
Ah, George. I'm glad you could make it, old boy.
You're off to the front, Billy.
Yes, George. And you. You're the deputy now, and you'll serve as acting Prime Minister for... about 7 months.
Seven? 7 months?
Ugh, don't worry, George. Look, it's better than nothing. Plenty of people never get to be acting Prime Minister at all.
No, Billy, how do you know how long...
Ha 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 ha! Don't think about it too hard, George. It's just a podcast.
Billy, aren't you nervous? What if something happens over there in Europe?
Ha! Not a chance, George. No, war isn't a risk. It's an opportunity. And I think I've finally figured out the answer to the question. What is it good for? What? Legacy. That's what. Say what you will about war, but it does leave a strong impression. I mean, I'll bet that everyone listening right now knows exactly who William Morris Hughes is.
Sure, Billy.
That's me. Off to the front it is. Good luck, George. And remember where your enemies lie. Sometimes, right under our noses. You'll do wonderful, George.
In 1929, a particularly severe invasion of emus in the Northampton district decided the government to subsidise the local boards pound for pound. Payments were made on a total of 2,148 birds.
Now, when Billy did return, he found a war of words almost as great as the war in Europe. The issue was conscription, and Labour was a party divided. Now, not to gloat, but I knew exactly what side of history I wanted to be on. So, with Billy and the True Believers, we formed the National Labour Party, prepared to stand up for the right of Australians to be conscripted like real men, ready to carry the flame of the workers' movement into the future. For the next few months, and that is. Because then, in a stroke of genius, we merged with the Commonwealth Liberals to form the Nationalist Party. Look, what kind of Australian would I be if I stopped after just one party?
For some years, trouble in the Northampton area waned, the rabbit-proof fence checking the movement of the emus southward from the Murchison country. In November 1930, the local vermin inspector reported that the number 3 rabbit-proof fence blocked thousands of emus going south.
They are lying dead all along the fence between Ajana and the junction of the number 2 and 3 fences. The farmers on the south side of the fence are jubilant.
Now, I'd been on such a journey already, across the political spectrum, from left to right and everywhere in between. But I still had one last step to take in my journey. And so, in 1931, I stood with Joseph Aloysius Lyons. Whew, what a guy. Yes, I stood with Joe Lyons and the United Australia Party. And that, well, that's where this story really begins.
In 1932, another focus of complaint against the emu developed in the northeastern wheatbelt, in the Campion, Bullfinch and Walgoolan areas. Here, an invasion of emus took place for the first time on a scale large enough to make them a serious menace. And the affected farmers persuaded the Commonwealth and state governments to become involved in that bizarre interlude. The Emu War of November 1932. Definite defeat of Scullin government. Labour rout in 4 states. 1931, December 20th. Sunday Times. The election campaign in this state was not marked by any particular enthusiasm on the part of the electors. As a matter of fact, despite the unusual importance of the election and the issues involved, there has not been any federal election campaign in Western Australia which has excited less interest or provided less evidence of any agitation of the public mind.
The indications are extremely gratifying,
said Sir George Pearce when interviewed last night,
and are a definite endorsement of the policy laid down at the Premier's conference. It is also a complete negative answer to the advocates of an unsound monetary policy and banking reform.
WA seats. On present appearances, Mr. Curtin will go under at Fremantle, and the chances are Mr. William Watson will be elected on preference voting. Mr. Nairn is assured of his return for Perth, Mr. Gregory is holding Swan, and Mr. Green looks like retaining Kalgoorlie. The combined United Australia Party and the United Country Party representatives will give a government of at least 46 members, with a federal Labour opposition strength of 15, Land Group 10.
Yes?
Sir, your agenda for today.
Ah, yes.
Well, Mr. Lyons has called an urgent cabinet meeting to discuss the economy. The League of Nations has published its Lytton report on the situation in Manchuria. I've got a copy here. Also, there are questions about the new attack class submarines. People are starting to say they're behind schedule. Oh, and don't forget you have a press conference scheduled for this afternoon. Here, these are your speaking notes. Oh, and there are some farmers here to see you.
Oh, ah!
I tried to turn them away, but...
The West Australian farmers?
Yes, sir. The West Australian farmers.
Well, bring them in! Well, what can I do for you all?
Ah, Minister Pearce. Please, sir, you have to help us. There's a scourge upon the land.
Yes, look, it's tough for everyone these days. The depression and all that.
No, sir. It's not the depression. We all feel fine. It's the emus.
Emus?
Yes, Minister Pearce. Emus. Perhaps you've been in Canberra too long. Don't you remember how they would come like a plague? Trampling, eating, laying waste. But this year, it's worse than ever.
One of them ate all my crops.
One of them ate my family.
One of them ate my tractor. And my house.
Whoa!
Well, what I mean is, I sleep in my tractor.
Oh, right.
Yeah, for a minute there, that really sounded unbelievable.
They come like locusts, devastating our livelihoods, desecrating everything civilization has built out in the wastes.
They come, totalizing, unignorable, like they were the voice of the absolute, reminding us of everything we don't acknowledge about this country.
You look at them, and you feel anger. But also sadness. A sadness that cuts to the bone. And however hard you try, you can't explain it.
And when they leave, and you look at what they've done, then you really understand the meaning of the great Australian silence. You see a wasteland, dispossessed, empty and ravaged. The utter hollowness of everything we thought was true in the face of such violence.
That's what they do, Minister.
Now do you understand?
Of course. Of course I remember the emus. How could I forget? But I'm the Minister for Defence, not the Minister for Agriculture.
We know, sir.
It's gone beyond that.
The emus aren't playing by the old rules anymore. Nothing stops them.
Hordes of them.
Mobs of marauding birds.
Each pack seems to have its leader now. A big black-plumed bird, which stands fully 6 feet high.
Keeps watch while his mates carry out their work of destruction and warns them of our approach.
The emus are organised. They're disciplined, and they don't take prisoners.
We need anything we can throw at them.
Munitions, artillery, explosives.
Sarin, mustard gas.
Think about it, sir. All the things you're not allowed to use on humans. There are no restrictions for emus.
Okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But perhaps I can help you out. Two Lewis guns, 10,000 rounds. I'll send Major Meredith with Sergeant McMurray and Gunner O'Halloran. See what kind of a mark they can make. How's that sound?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Whew, hell of a pest control operation.
Sir, Minister, this is not pest control. This is war.
Machine guns sent against emu pest. 1932, November 3rd. The Canberra Times. Perth, Wednesday. A party of Lewis gunners has been sent to the Campion district to exterminate emus, which have caused serious damage to crops. The officer in charge of the party received orders from military headquarters in Sydney for 100 emu skins, the feathers of which will be used for hats worn by light horsemen.
Ah, stand proud, men. It's a bright new dawn, full of inspiration, full of purpose. Trust me, I've been on many a battlefield in my time, but I've never had an assignment like this. I'm your commander, Major G.P.W. Meredith. And who have we got here? McMurray?
Yes, sir.
O'Halloran?
Yes, sir. Present.
And you. Who are you? Never seen you before.
Johnson, sir.
Well, Johnson, welcome along for the ride. You ever shot a man before?
Well, no, sir.
Have you ever held a gun before?
Well, no.
Well, never mind. We'll soon fix that. In the meantime, here are your briefings. All of you, know your enemy.
Birds of Western Australia, 1948. Emus and cassowaries. Order cassowary formers. Emus, family Dromaeidae. Emu, Dromaeus novae hollandiae. The largest bird in Australia and recognisable at sight without any description being needed. The sexes are similar, and despite bush law on the subject, there is no universal rule on sex recognition. There is no difference in eye colour, which varies from yellow to dark brown. S.J.J.F. Davies has found that the female is slightly larger than the male, but there is considerable overlap. In every mated pair, however, the female is the larger.
Oh, damn broads.
God, do I hate these uppity women.
Almost makes you feel sorry for the emu men, huh, boys?
During the 4 months before egg laying, the female is also darker than the male. She undergoes a body molt between February and May, whereas he molts after the eggs hatch in July and August, and, as a result, she is in new, dark plumage at a time when he is still in old, faded plumage. In addition, between February and May, dark feathers grow on the female's head and upper neck, and the white bases of the neck feathers of the male become conspicuous, so that dark-light contrast between the sexes is exaggerated.
Here we are, boys. The Campion. The emu's lair. Deep in the heart of darkness.
What are we looking for, sir?
That's the question, O'Halloran. Catch an emu, you have to think like an emu. What are we looking for?
Nesting. The nest is almost always situated in open country and placed in the vicinity of a tree or large bush. In hilly or rough country, a site on top of breakaways or hills is chosen. A flat bed of grasses, bark, leaves, etc. is usually made and trampled down, and on this the eggs are deposited.
Getting closer now. Close. Wooded country.
The canopy. It's dense. It's getting harder to see.
Stay strong, McMurray.
The birds feed on a wide variety of native fruits, vegetable matter, and insects. In late summer and autumn, they eat grass and insects that follow the summer rains, and in winter feed on the leaves and flowering heads of winter herbs. In the southwest, they eat the fleshy fruits of the emu bush, the red rind of zamia nuts, and even she-oak fruits. Plague grasshoppers are eaten in large quantities when available, and also caterpillars.
Here! Look! The bush is a little clearer here!
Right, O'Halloran. Plants are more thinned out. As if something's been here.
It's them. It's them.
What's that, Johnson?
This is where they live. You can see. All the plants that are thinned out are the plants they eat. The zamia nuts, the she-oak, and the emu bush.
Well, well, well. Aren't you just full of surprises, Johnson? You can't tell one end of a gun from the other, but you know all about how an emu lives. I hope you haven't been taking an undue interest in these things.
No, sir.
Well, if this is where they are, then we just need to find them. What was that about the nests? Up against trees or bushes?
Look! There!
New-laid eggs have a beautiful blue bloom, which is rapidly rubbed off with the bird's body, probably even before it leaves the nest after laying the egg. The colour of the granulated shell is dark green, and, as incubation proceeds, the eggs become polished by the wearing down of the granulations. They thus appear to become generally darker.
Good eyes, O'Halloran. Yes. Yes! There they are, boys! The eggs! This is gonna feel good. Trust me. There is no satisfaction like killing an emu before it can walk. Before it can even blink at the sunlight. Ready, weapons? Take aim!
Wait!
What?
Well, they're... aren't they? Look, they're helpless, Major.
And what? You'd rather let the monsters gestate? This isn't sport, son. There are no rules anymore. There's no fair play. They made sure of that. The emus have made their declaration of war, and they never signed the Geneva Convention. You think they're going to show us any mercy? Any at all? You're wrong.
But, look at them. Look at the color. Blue, bright blue. Azure, like the morning sky. They've barely known their parents. They've just been left here for some reason. Isn't that some hope? They haven't learnt the ways of the emu. They're innocent. If we could take these eggs back to civilization, we could raise them as good, honest citizens of the Empire.
Johnson, Johnson, Johnson. What will I do with you? Don't you remember your briefing? Once an emu, always an emu. How difficult is that to understand? Look, did you ever study birds in school? You know what they say nowadays? Birds are dinosaurs. Birds are dinosaurs, they say, and it seems incredible. Birds are so cute. They're so fluffy. It couldn't be dinosaurs. I used to think the same thing. But you'll understand. You will understand. When you see an emu for the first time, it all slots into place. It all makes sense in that moment. That thing's not a bird. It's not a plane. It's an abomination! The chimera from a land before time, an emu, is a velociraptor that came to the wasteland and outstayed its welcome. But that ends today, Johnson. Starting right here and now. Have you got what it takes? Are you ready to fire on those eggs?
I...
Fire! Good work, boys. Just more emus that the world never has to be troubled by.
Both sexes are able to give both a drumming call and a guttural grunt, but the male gives most grunts and the female does most drumming. Two types of drumming occur. One is given by birds that are slightly alarmed, and this is the gentle bubbling call for which captive emus are famous. The other is a much more resonant and louder booming call, given by a female about the time she is laying and for some weeks afterwards. Pronounced expansion of the air sacs of the neck accompanies this booming.
What is that?
I always know the sound of an enemy.
It's them, isn't it? Oh, that sound!
Stay strong, men! We have the firepower! Remember, they're more afraid of us than we are of them.
No, sir. Look around. The glints of their eyes. The shadows of their beaks. They're all around us! We're surrounded!
Don't let them surround us! Or of them to kill! Come on, boys! This way! Back to the truck!
There it is!
Quick, get in! Great Scott! They're following us!
They never stop!
Major, I'm not sure we're gonna make it out of
here. Pull yourself together! We can do this! O'Halloran! McMurray! Man the guns! You, Johnson! Radio for help!
Radio?
There it is, on the dashboard!
They don't go down! Major, they're not going down! They just get angrier!
This is Canberra. Who's speaking?
This is Johnson from the Campion Strike Force. We need backup! Lots of backup! We didn't know what we're getting into! We thought they were bears! We thought they were mortal! We're messing with forces beyond our control! Tell them! You need to tell them! Don't come to Campion! No one makes it out alive! This is Emu Land now! Don't try to fight back! Don't try to resist! Not if you know what's... Oh God! They're taking out the radio! They're taking out...
Hold strong, boys! No mercy! If we go down, we'll take as many of these monsters as we can down with us!
Motorists on country roads have often checked the running speed of the emu. Cars can pace the bird up to 25 to 30 miles per hour.
I never thought I'd die like this!
Killed by emus? Pecked to death? Oh God, what will that feel like?
Not a chance. If they catch up to us, I'll kill myself before I let an emu touch me.
And then overtake it.
Look, they're falling behind.
They're tied. Finally, bastards are tied.
I never thought I'd see another day.
Ha! They won't take us out that easily. Live to fight on. With a vengeance.
The gunners' dreams of point-blank fire into masses of emus soon vanished. On the second day, it was realized that open warfare was useless, as the birds had split up into innumerable small parties. Ambuscades were resorted to, and the guns placed at dams where the birds came to drink. Before daylight on November 4th, a mob of about 1,000 emus approached such an ambush, the largest mob that had hitherto come within point-blank range. Gunner O'Halloran opened fire at a few hundred yards, and about a dozen birds fell when the gun jammed.
Quiet, boys. Quiet. Here they come. Remember how scared you were yesterday? Don't you want them to feel that terror? Vile creatures. Okay. Ready? O'Halloran, fire at will!
God damn it! Jammed!
There! Over there!
Fall in flank! Two hostiles on the left!
There!
It's no use. They're gone.
Gun jammed? So it seems the emus aren't above sabotage. Never mind. They can't run forever.
Major, I don't know that it was the emus. It might just need an oil.
That's what they want you to think, O'Halloran. Really, just apply Occam's razor to the situation. What's the simplest explanation? You really think the gun just jammed on its own?
Well...
Johnson! Here's something for you to do. You like your emus. Why don't you go and put them out of their misery?
What?
You wouldn't want them to suffer any longer than they had to, would you? Go on. Remember, there's only two ways to kill an emu for sure. Shoot him through the back of his head when his mouth is closed, or through the front of his mouth when his mouth is open. Your choice.
The Emu War, 1932, November 9th. The Daily News.
Stop it! Stop! Do you really have to moan like that? Really?
After a short, sharp campaign, the military operations against the emu tribes have ceased with dramatic suddenness, and for the time being, all is quiet on the Campion front.
Oh, God! I'm sorry. I'm sorry. How did I get here? Why is this happening? Why am I putting down a bunch of emu? I'm sorry. I never wanted to!
The White High Command, which had been sparring for time while putting the finishing touches to the plans for the Great Offensive, is clearly bamboozled by the quick turn of events, and after the fashion of High Commands is uncommunicative to the correspondents on the spot.
Oh God. Okay. Yes. Goodbye. Sorry. Okay. One down.
Gossip, which has trickled through from the Chancellery at Canberra, however, suggests that the statesmen of the supporting power suddenly awakened to certain political and financial implications of the situation and decided that it was not going to be trapped into another long war.
Oh no. This is wrong. This is so wrong! I was terrified of you yesterday! They're all terrified of you! They keep saying this is the only way, but they must... there must be something else! Oh no.
The position, however, is indefinite. No treaty of peace has been concluded, and the emus remain in possession of disputed territory. It is therefore expected that regular military operations will be continued by guerrilla warfare, which may continue for years, and may be accompanied by stories of horrible atrocities.
I'm sorry.
The Emu Commander is maintaining a studied silence as to his future plans, but it is understood that he is much impressed with the capacity for resistance shown by raw troops and confident that they will continue to uphold the best traditions of the race. He is credited with the intention to arrange for a suitable poem to commemorate the Emu glory on the field of Campion.
I'm sorry.
An Oral History of the Emu War. End of Part 1. Made as part of the Bathurst Arts and Theatrical Society 2020 Flu Season. With the voices of
Peggy Aitken,
Heath Delahunty,
Joshua Hosey,
and Max Wilson,
Aspen Beilharts,
Jack Clayton,
Danica Roberts,
and Sky Rhiannon Beach.
Written and directed by Aspen Beilharts. Production management by Danica Roberts. Podcast production by Jack Clayton. Edited by Heath Delahunty. Foley by Sky Rhiannon Beach. The creators would like to acknowledge the Wiradjuri, Ngunnawal, and Muwinina peoples, the traditional owners and custodians of the land from which collaboration took place, stolen land, the sovereignty of which has never been ceded, and to pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.